Hour three on the Maggie and Perloff Show. EJ Stewart, executive producer of the Maggie and Perloff Show, filling in as host today. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. I have grave concerns that one of our NFL organizations is about to make a decision that's going to have negative ramifications that could last a decade. And I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying that, because I have seen it with my organization and other teams as well. Before we get to that, I want to get to the phone lines again. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. We were talking a lot about the Steelers last hour. Justin Fields saying, hey, I've shown them what I could do, which I'm like, really? Preseason game didn't look that good, so if that's what you got, then I'm a little concerned. I just look at a Steelers organization, I see a Steelers situation that I don't think reads, I don't think it reads elite. I don't think it reads top tier. It reads mid to me. It reads we're getting lapped. I see the other division teams getting better. I see the star power in the other divisional teams. I don't see the Steelers having a snowball chance in hell of winning this division. And I don't think this is a one-year thing. I think because they're stuck in limbo, this is going to be a prolonged suffering for the Steelers. I don't know when they get back to being one of the premier franchises in the NFL. Call in 855-212-4227. I want to get to my good friend Andy, who is in Pittsburgh, wants to talk some Steelers. What's up, Andy? Good to hear from you, man.
Hey, I think the Steelers are going to go 14-3 because I'm a lifelong Seahawk fan, and I've seen Russell Wilson enough to know he's going to come out and put on a show. His back's against the wall, it's just going to be like that. I mean, I've seen this before with him, and I think that's what they're going to do, 14-3. Even though I got to live with these Steelers fans up here, they're surprised I'm saying that, but I know Russell Wilson.
That's interesting. Andy, so you're a Steelers fan in Pittsburgh. Before I get to your take on how did that happen?
Well, I grew up in southern West Virginia near where Kurt Warner, the running back for Penn State, quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom's Penn State grad.
Hometown hero when I was a kid down there, so I rooted for him ever since.
That's what's up. That's cool. I actually really think that's neat because that's something we see a lot from younger fans. Like younger fans today, Andy, they'll say, I became a fan of this team because I love this player. And a lot of older fans actually don't like that, but I think it's neat. Like all my brothers, we all grew up in New York City. I'm the only Jet fan or anybody who roots for New York teams. Like my brother, he's a Viking fan because his favorite player was Randy Moss. My other brother, his favorite player was, you know, Drew Brees, so he's a Saints fan. Like, and they stick with their teams, which I think is really neat. So I think that's really cool, Andy. But I have one question for you. I know you said you know Russ, and you know what he's like when his back is against the wall. But, I mean, hasn't his back been against the wall for 3-4 years now? I mean, he might as well be like the Shadow Cat in X-Men. He might be through the wall at this point. I mean, back against the wall last year in Seattle, they didn't get it done. Back against the wall year one in Denver when there was all these expectations, did he get it done? Last year playing for his career in Denver, did he get it done? I mean, his back has been against the wall at this point, Andy. I mean, why now is going to be the difference where he turns it around?
Because if he don't come through this year, he's just going to be a career backup next year or may not be in the league. But I think he's going to put on a show, and some team will give him a $200 million contract, or he'll at least get the Baker Mayfield deal, 3-year and $100 million.
Okay, Baker Mayfield deal, I can see. The 200, seeing the face of my good friend Ryan Botcher behind the glass, his face contorted in ways that I've never seen before. Andy, thank you so much for the phone call. When he heard he was going to get a $200 million, Ryan's face did things I just haven't seen body parts do, probably since my knee exploded on a kickball field, honestly.
There's no way Russell Wilson is making another $200 million contract.
Yeah, that's unlikely. I have a question for you. Before I even get into like what the other stuff Andy had to say, what do you think Russell Wilson would have to do to get a $200 million contract, Andy? I mean, obviously,
sign a broadcasting deal? Probably that.
Honestly, that's...
Even still, nobody wants him.
That's a good answer. Like, that would probably be... Because what did Tom Brady get? 300?
Close to that, right?
I mean...
But Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, here's like the thing. Maybe $50 million.
I think there's a scenario where maybe if Russell Wilson wins a Super Bowl and then retires, maybe he gets $200 million from a broadcast. Like that's the scenario.
His personality is so bad.
But you would have the reigning Super Bowl winning quarterback who left on top, who's a star personality. Like we might not like him, but like he's a celebrity. Like, you know, people who don't know football know Russell Wilson because of his relationship, his marriage with Ciara. So,
there's a higher percent chance he has a reality TV show with Ciara than him becoming an NFL broadcaster.
He can make money with that, too. Not $200 million money, but good money.
It's more likely that he does that than commentate NFL.
I don't know.
That's how I see Russell Wilson.
I tell reality you what, I think he'd be dumb if he did that because there was a time when Russell Wilson was not this punchline in terms of his personality. Like, he's always kind of been, he's been who he is. I don't want to say, you know, he's a lot of people say he's corny. I think he's, I actually think this is who he is. I think he's just a very corny guy, maybe naturally. But, like, he's been this way for a long time. It's just only recently when he started playing poorly that then his Seahawks teammates and former teams were like, hey, this guy sucks, and we hated him this whole time, even when he was good, that he is now, and then he really struggled in Denver, was when we really started to get the, oh, like, Russ is, like, this corny guy. If he goes to do direct reality TV, it may be entertaining, but I think for his personal psyche and, like, what he's been through, like, he's always been able to lean on being a professional athlete and being an elite athlete. If he's only leaning on his personality, which a lot of people don't like, that the reaction to that, that he can maybe block out as a pro athlete, he can't block out as a reality star. So that would be, I think you're right in that that's probably the more likely route for him because he's a celebrity, but I think he'd be better served just covering football because, hey, look, there's no better place where cliches and canned statements are welcomed than an NFL broadcast booth. Like, yes, the great ones don't do that. The John Maddens, you know, don't do that. But, like, there are a million other guys who do games every Sunday that do. And you can make good money and be fine and have a great living. As long as you're not super boring like Jason Garrett or someone like that, like, you could do this for a long time just being weird cliches and, you know, being Russell Wilson. It lines up well. I do think his personality, though, I don't think he would want to do it.
He's boring. I'm sorry. He's just boring.
I don't find – the thing about Russ for me is I don't find him either offensive or someone, like, I enjoy. Like,
he's just turkey sandwich. It's, like, plain.
I don't find him – I don't even find him boring. I just think that, like – I don't know. I feel like maybe I identify with, like, I've seen this kind of person before. Here's who Russell Wilson is to me. Like, I feel like I went to Catholic high school. You did, too. We went to actually in the same orbit, so to speak. Not the same school, but same league, technically. Like – I've seen a lot of brothers like Russell Wilson. He seemed like a private school athlete. Like, cliche, seems to have, like, a very comfortable background, maybe not the most aware of, like, what his things about his personality be grading. As a fellow Catholic high school athlete, I just feel like I've seen this person a zillion times. So it doesn't bother me. It's just like, I've seen this person. But, like, everyone else who doesn't maybe deal with these folks are like, why is this guy like this? And why is he like this at age 35? I can't answer that, per se. But I guess to me, that's why I don't mind him. And I wouldn't mind him if he was doing football games. I just feel like he would have trouble if he did a reality show and, like, his personality was all he had. That, because then he would, I think there'd be more of it. People would get more upset. I think he would be able to not be able to avoid it, and that'd be a problem. But on to Andy's point about the Steelers and Russ having this back against the wall situation, like 13 games. I mean, God bless you. If you could find them, you could find the 13 wins. God bless you. I look at just the Steeler team, and it's like I said earlier. You gotta have some layups on the schedule. We always give team layups. We give some of the best teams layups. Like, who would have thought last year that the Chiefs were gonna go on Christmas Day at home and get blown out by the Raiders? Not one person. There is not one person, definitely not that 10-year-old kid who we heard from, the Las Vegas Raiders fan, who said, we ain't winning the Super Bowl, and our only chance this year is to not get arrested. Like, he damn sure wasn't picking the Raiders to beat the Chiefs before the season that year. But, like, there are so many games that are going to be unpredictable. There are so many games that you think you have that are going to end up being very tough games, especially division games, and they play in a very tough division. I just look at the Steelers and I say, like, they're not going to get easy wins. Like, they're just not going to blow people out because their offense, I just don't see the forest through the trees here. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I think Arthur Smith, even a good offense that he runs, is going to be very average. And it's almost average by design. Arthur Smith is conservative. Arthur Smith doesn't like turnovers. Arthur Smith likes to run the football. And his thing is, you know, don't beat yourself and then take the big shots when we can. And it worked well for the time he was in Tennessee. I think that I always say I thought he was underrated in Tennessee because I was like, I know they don't put up a lot of points, but like given their lack of talent outside of Derrick Henry, like the fact that he has them winning games and moving the football regularly is pretty impressive. So I actually kind of like him as an offensive coordinator overall in terms of whatever your team is. I just feel like this team, because they don't have a Derrick Henry and because this is an offense that's new, where either you have a quarterback in Justin Fields, who I think in some ways is still developing, or Russell Wilson, a guy who's coming to now his third offensive system in 3 years. He went to the Nathaniel Hackett system, couldn't hack it, no pun intended. Went to Sean Payton couldn't stand him, and now he's with Arthur Smith. By the way, those are three coaches, could not be more different offensively. Like, think of, like, I'm trying to think of three offensive coaches. Like, that is, you go from Nathaniel Hackett, kind of a bozo. Offense, you know, is a lot of the quarterback really has to, like, change things and fix his mistakes in order for it to work. Like, that's what Aaron Rodgers has done for, like, 15 years with Nathaniel Hackett. Like, so you have that offense where it's all on the quarterback in their brain and their abilities kind of, like, translate what the vision of what Nathaniel Hackett wants to do and fix it on the fly. And then you got Sean Payton. Timing, precision, no frills, accuracy is utmost importance. It's important in every offense, but like you if you miss those layups in Sean Payton's offense, like you just don't have a shot. You don't have a shot. Like, then you have that offense. Now you go to Arthur Smith, ground and pound, a lot of hand the football off, and then taking shots in play action, hoping that you hit home runs in that way. You're not going to be able to throw the ball 30, 40 times, get into a rhythm. You're talking about 25 throws, maybe 30 throws tops. A lot of it conservative stuff, and then you got to hit your home runs. It's just an entirely, three entirely different systems. Now, he's an NFL scholar at this point, Russell Wilson. Like, he knows offensive football left and right because he's been in the NFL so long. But you're talking about three different offenses in 3 years. Now I got him with a new team. He's going to have to figure that out. I don't see, where is the Steeler offense turning around? I don't see it. Like, I like Jaylen Warren. He's pretty good. The Steelers don't seem to like Najee Harris that much. I think he's okay, but they didn't pick up his option, so they seem to be fine with him maybe walking out the door this year. And I actually think George Pickens is a little overrated. Like, everyone talks about how great this guy is. I know his offenses have sucked. I know he hasn't had the best quarterbacks. I haven't seen the production. I haven't really seen the consistency like I've seen maybe from a Garrett Wilson, where he's been in a bad offense, but I've still seen enough consistency to be like, okay, yeah, if he was in a better offense, he'd be maybe the best receiver in the NFL. Pickens, I feel like he's a talented player who's in a terrible offense, so he has no shot, and if he was on a better offense, we could maybe see what he can be. So I think there's still, like, I don't say question mark, but I don't know if he's an absolute number one receiver. And I don't really think the rest of their guys are all that talented in terms of their pass catchers. So I don't see the weapons. Offensive line's horrible. Like, where is this Steeler team turning into a division winner? Where is this Steeler team turning into a team that's competing for a championship? And then I think that they're going to be able to continue this streak of this 9 wins, barely make the playoffs, stay out of losing records. And this division is not happening. It's too good. How do you look at the Bengals roster, the Ravens roster, the Browns roster, and say the Steelers are just going to find a way through osmosis to somehow keep winning 9 games and making the playoffs? Not going to happen, especially when you got other teams in the conference who are also getting better. The Jets may have something to say. Dolphins may have something to say. Bills may have something to say. There's other good teams, too, that they have to leapfrog to keep winning these 9 games every year. Certain point is going to run out. I think the luck runs out here. 855-212-4227. There's an NFL team. I'm warning you. Don't do it. Don't do it. You're getting a lot of pressure. It's what the fans want. And the temptation is there. But don't do it. Who am I talking about? I'll tell you guys after the break. It's EJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff. We'll be right back. 8:20 Eastern here on the East Coast. ZJ Stewart filling in for Maggie and Perloff. Number to call in, 855-212-4227. You can also hit me up on Twitter /X, EJ_Stewart. I read tweets on the air, as long as it's not weird OnlyFans spam accounts or you cursing me out, calling me an idiot. You can call me an idiot, just don't curse me out, because then I can't read on the air. Ryan will have to hit that dump button, so that won't work. So hit me up. As I always say, there's only two commandments on an EJ Stewart hosted show. EJ will always keep you 100 with you. EJ is ducking no smoke. I believe sports radio is not quite a participation, spectator sport. It can be. But audience interaction is welcomed and encouraged. So call in 855-212-4227 or hit me up on Twitter /X. Also, make sure if you want to watch the show and you want to make comments there, I'm reading those comments as well. Watch the show on YouTube, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNetwork. Also, follow us on Twitch as well. The show is streaming on our Infinity Sports Network page there. Don't do it, Patriots. I'm sorry. Don't do it. And sometimes the reality of doing this show as the executive producer is I sit here and I watch Goat Gray, as I'm calling Maggie now that she's been identified as one of the top women in media, which is obvious. She's a star. Awesome. I'm watching the radio legend, McLovin, every day do his thing. I'm watching these two say things, and I hear something, and I go, ugh. I don't mean the, ugh, Maggie just spelled out a curse, or, ugh, Perloff is not, didn't hear what Bogus just said. I don't mean that. Yes, that does happen as a producer, but I don't necessarily mean that. What I mean is I hear a take, and I go, ugh. And yesterday's show, I did hear both of them co-sign starting Drake May week one for the Patriots. And I'm warning New England, don't do it. Please don't do it. I feel like the Flash in Justice League, which was terrible, by the way, but he runs back from the past. He's yelling at Bruce Wayne, don't do it. Lois is the key. I feel like I'm the guy from the future who's already seen what happens when you start rookie quarterbacks in terrible situations who are not ready, who are raw, and how that ruins players. And I look at what's happening in New England, a job that it appeared, again, similar to Pittsburgh, where in offseason it was Jacoby Brissett's QB1. There's no question about it. We're not really concerned about Drake May starting immediately. That said, that's smart. But we're moving closer to week one. You heard yesterday Drake May asked if Jacoby Brissett's the starter. He said, I'm not 100% sure. So I was like, that's an interesting way to put that there. He's not convinced. Gerard Mayo basically being like, yeah, man, Drake May, he can run a huddle. Absolutely. And I'm thinking, I see this yesterday. I'm like, oh, no. They're going to do it, aren't they? And then I heard this from Alex Van Pelt, their offensive coordinator, on Drake May.
Yeah, he's taking steps forward every single day. That's the big thing. There's no regression. He's taking what he's learned from the previous practices and applying it to the next practice. He's been really impressive, last few weeks especially.
Really impressive the last few weeks. Now, if you remember when training camp started, remember, Ryan, the word was, he has a lot of work to do. that's a quote from Gerard Mayo. That's not me embellishing or me lead. He said he's got a lot of work to do. They saw that guy throwing around passes, getting picked off, not knowing the offense, being like, he's got a lot of work to do. Now, 3 weeks later, maybe it's because they seen Jacoby Brissett run that offense, and it looked very, not, I can't even say mid. It looks garbage.
Maybe it's not the quarterbacks and it's just the talent around them.
There's something to that, Ryan. And that gets to my point here. Drake May, he probably has improved. I like Drake May. I think he was definitely not one of the top two quarterbacks in this draft. I probably have him three. But honestly, I've really been impressed with Bo Nix. I was not a Bo Nix guy. And apologies to the Oregon faithful. I think I either did a show or maybe I was behind the glass and I said something about Drake May and they just buried me. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys really love Bo. Bo Nix, I meant. And they buried me. I was like, oh my God, you guys really love Bo Nix. I like him, but I don't know. The system helped him, I think, in Oregon. But I've been really impressed, and I'm starting to come around on that. I think that's a good fit there. So maybe he's QB4. I think he's – I don't like – I'm not a J.J. McCarthy guy, So, but I think Drake May has a shot because the physical tools are there. But despite playing a lot of football, for some reason, he's still kind of raw. And I feel like I have a little authority to say this only because I follow the ACC very closely as a Miami Hurricanes fan. And honestly, I think Drake May should probably thank the Miami Hurricanes for his draft status. Because I think his ability to beat us every year he was there and have some really good high-profile games against Miami, I think certainly helped his draft stock. That tape damn sure didn't hurt him in terms of whether or not he's going to be drafted high in this draft. So I feel like I've seen a little Drake May, both against Miami, but just against other teams because I'm following the ACC. And, like, the kid's got really good arm. He's very accurate. He seems like a high-character guy. But I think he's still raw. I think he's still going to be a guy that needs some time to develop. And the last thing this kid needs is to be thrust into what is a roster that legit could win one or two games this year. Like, if they lost 16 games or 15 games, that would not be a surprise at all. He's going to one of the worst rosters, if not the worst roster in the NFL, where offensive line is actually not terrible, but not top tier. Zero help with the receivers. Zero. I mean, you watch these games, and last year, watching in the preseason, it's like these receivers are glued to the DBs. They get zero separation. This is a kid that has struggled sometimes with accuracy and struggled a lot with timing. And Bill Belichick did a great job, I think, of pointing that out when he did his draft breakdown during the NFL draft. These guys get no separation. It's bad enough in the NFL. The one thing all quarterbacks say, when they say, what's the difference between the NFL and college, the first thing they say is speed of the game. But let's get that out because it's not even a cliche answer. I think it's true. But, like, that's what everybody says. The other thing they always say that I think people forget is they're like, the lack of separation the receivers get in the NFL is so much different in college. In college, you're throwing into big windows. You just get the ball there. The guy will catch it. And, like, it's just different. Guys, especially when you're playing, he played at North Carolina. So it wasn't like he's playing at Alabama where he's not playing with, Davante Adams and Jalen Waddle, where they're just there's just like 10-yard separation. I mean, that's why I think when we talked about evaluating someone like Mac Jones, I think that was something that got lost in the shuffle. It's like he's throwing to guys that are wide open, like anybody can make these throws. But he played in North Carolina, so it wasn't like he was playing with super superstar guys, and they had just such an athletic advantage. But typically, it's just a lot easier to find guys open. Like, you are throwing to guys that are open in the NFL. You throw guys open. Guys don't necessarily get open. You have to throw it to spots, throw it to windows that make them open because there's so much speed, there's so much talent on the defensive side of the ball that guys just don't get that kind of separation. So you're telling me a quarterback who, like I said, needs to improve his accuracy, needs to improve his timing, who at the starting training camp, they said, had a lot of work to do, and is now playing with the bottom of the NFL roster. And I didn't even throw in the big one, which is he's the real heir apparent to Tom Brady. But I know with the Mac Jones thing, I don't think Patriot fans even really believe that he was the guy. I'll be real. I think they had to talk themselves into that. The Patriots, maybe they did believe it. I don't know. I don't think Bill Belichick believed it because he seemed like he hated that kid as soon as he got there. They were winning games. And he seemed annoyed with Mac Jones. So I don't know if he believed it. But I think the organization tried to talk themselves into it, and they may have believed it. I think the fans definitely had to talk themselves into him being the heir apparent. This guy, I think, is the true heir apparent in the sense that they think he's the guy that gets them back to the promised land. He's the guy that gets the organization back to being one of the first-class league organizations in the NFL. I don't think they ever really believed that Mac Jones was that guy. I think they thought, we can compete with Mac Jones. We can make playoffs with Mac Jones, which they did in the first year. I don't think they really thought that they got an NFL superstar at quarterback again. I think they thought they got a guy who was serviceable. They don't think that with Drake May. They think Drake May is a future superstar. At least that's what they're hoping for. They drafted him at number 3. You cannot take a kid like that with all this pressure, with the circumstances all working against him, where you see a veteran quarterback struggling mightily to get anything out of these guys. You cannot throw him into this situation with this crap-ass team. You cannot do it. And I say that because I saw it with Zach Wilson, where you took a raw quarterback who needed more time to develop and you threw him out there with no offensive line and no receivers and they ate him alive. So with Sam Darnold, where you threw him out there with no receivers, no offensive line, and it ate him alive. And that's just the New York examples, but there are examples all over the NFL and NFL history of quarterbacks being thrown into situations too early or not being put in a situation where maybe even if they could play, they're playing on a team that's so bad that it's going to ruin their development. The greatest example, I think, is always David Carr, who kind of gets forgotten about because of his brother, who actually became a better player, Derek Carr. But David Carr was the number one pick in the draft, first pick ever for the Houston Texans. And, you know, great arm, mobile, tough. A guy who, in a different circumstance, had potential. We just had no chance to ever see it because he got bludgeoned in his first year. They set the record for the most sacks. He had no receivers. His confidence was shaken and broken, and it was over. I think a Tim Couch, a similar guy. Big arm, athletic. He goes to Cleveland, and he was a guy that I think struggled with confidence a lot. The last thing you want a guy who's not confident is throwing him in there with an expansion team with nobody to throw to. Same story. Destroyed, playing with nobody around him. He had no chance. I really fear that if they throw Drake May out there with this team, that to me is almost not fit to be an NFL team, to be honest. That's how bad they are. It could ruin the kid forever. And it will suck because we will never really know if Drake May could have got it done. I'm one of those people that does believe. I believe the great, great players, absolutely, they go to any situation, they find a way. A Patrick Mahomes, a Peyton Manning, those guys, kind of guys. But I do think there are other, like, great players, too. There's another class of great players where situation absolutely matters. Like, who would have thought Drew Brees was ever going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback when you saw those first 2 years in San Diego? He looked terrible. But Marty Schottenheimer comes in. They change the system. They continue to add weapons. Antonio Gates becomes a revelation. All of a sudden, he's like, oh, wow, Drew Brees. This guy kind of like a busses rookie year for sure. He looks pretty good. Then he goes to Sean Payton, and he becomes iconic. Like, I think there's tiers and there's factions of great players, and some can just go anywhere and succeed. Others need to be in the right position to succeed. I think Drake May, if he's going to be a great player, he's the second part. He's the latter. He's the guy that's going to need a great situation. And he has something that is nothing close to a great situation in New England, which is why it would be a grave mistake if they started him week one. 855-212-4227. Peter Schwartz is here with updates. Peter, what's happening?
Well, EJ, we'll begin in Toronto. Ernie Clement continue to swing a hot bat.
He is well-traveled. 1-2 pitch is hit high, very deep, left field. Ward going back. Ernie Clement has left the yard. Ow. Ow. That pitch was up near his eyes, and he somehow hit it out. Third game for Clement in a row with a home run, and it's 4-0 Blue Jays.
That was the call on Blue Jays radio, and the Blue Jays beat the Angels 5-3. Now we go to Atlanta.
2-0 to DeVol. Swung on, driven deep to left center field. That's got a chance to get out of here. It is gone! As called by Jonathan Chadwick, he said he was going to go deep, and Adam DeVol cleared the dirt. He cleared the warning track. He cleared the fence.
That was Joe Simpson on Braves Radio. Braves beat the Phillies 3-2. They maintain a game-and-a-half lead over the Mets for the third National League wildcard spot. That's because the Mets beat the Padres 8-3. In the American League East, the Yankees beat the Guardians 6-0. The Orioles lost to the Astros 6-0, so the Yankees now have a game-and-a-half lead on the Orioles atop the American League East. Now to Chicago we go. It was a grand day for the Cubs.
Amaya wearing bright red batting gloves on each hand. The pitch to Miguel.
A swing and a drive. Deep left field. It's got a chance. Grand slam home run for Miguel Amaya.
That was Pat Hughes on Cubs Radio. Cubs over the Tigers 10-2. Also from baseball yesterday, the Mariners fired manager Scott Servais. They named Dan Wilson as their new manager. The Dodgers designate Jason Hayward for assignment. NFL preseason last night, the Bears beat the Chiefs 34-21. Colts over the Bengals 27-14. Preseason action tonight, the Jaguars will visit the Falcons. Jaguars head coach Doug Peterson on what to expect.
This third and final preseason game, we usually let the starters play a little bit more. You know, and again, it depends on the circumstance and the way the game goes, but you'd love to get maybe two quarters, you know, out of them.
It's amazing how different philosophies the coaches have on these preseason games, especially the last one.
It's incredible. I think the fact that teams don't seem to be taking it quite as seriously, and then the fact that it's now three games, has made it so random. Like, honestly, thank goodness the Bengals' second-team defense, like, really showed up yesterday. They made that preseason game between them and the Colts actually kind of entertaining. Like, they made plays. They competed. Mm-hmm. They obviously had a pick six. They stripped Anthony Richardson, so it was good to see. But you have some of these games where you got first-team offense versus second-team defense. Like, the Giants have this disastrous start to their preseason game against the Texans, but then the Texans pull their defense early. Giants offense still out there. Then they start to move the ball. They look okay. It's like, all right, well, they look better, but they're against the second-team defense. Like, I think it almost seemed like back in the day there used to be almost like a gentleman's agreement of like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You're going to play the same amount of guys. We'll play the same amount of guys.
It was scripted.
Right. It was basically scripted on both sides, and they had almost, again, like a gentleman's agreement. Now it's just some guys, some teams don't play their whole start. The other team's playing nobody. I want to ask you this because I asked this earlier. I said this earlier in the show. I think that preseason football should be abolished. I think that it's unnecessary because the teams, like, we have this unevenness when it comes to who plays who.
Mm-hmm.
And the joint practices have really become preseason. Like, they become almost events. Like, that's where the number ones are playing the number ones. It's highly competitive. We're seeing fights break out. Like, it's way different than watching even ones versus ones in preseason. To me, why not just make that your preseason football? And why don't you have, just like we do with spring practice or spring football, where we televise games on ESPNU or sometimes on ESPN, televise them like preseason games. I don't know why we can't just do that, because is a terrible product.
The preseason games are awful, and I actually was contemplating going to the Jet-Giant game with my family tomorrow night, and thank God we never made the investment to get the tickets, because now the Jets aren't playing anybody tomorrow.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's a problem. Look, the teams are still going to want to do it, because even if they go to 18 games in the regular season, they'll cut it down to two games in the preseason. They don't want to give up the gate. They charge season ticket holders. This is why I tell people who want to get season tickets, wait till after preseason to buy the season tickets.
Right.
Because it's not like they don't have them. They'll have them for you. Just buy them after the preseason games are over. You don't have to get on the hook for the preseason games. It's just god-awful that they charge that amount. I've always thought maybe if you're going to have the preseason games, play them all at neutral sites. Like, you could take like the Jet-Giant game tomorrow night, for example. Play it at either Yankee Stadium or Citi Field, because the Giants used to play at Yankee Stadium, the old one, and the Jets played at Shea, which was next to where Citi Field is now. So be a little creative. You could have the Bengals and the Browns, if they played in the preseason, play the game in Canton. Like, find different places. At least make it somewhat interesting and appealing to watch the games. Otherwise, it's just garbage.
It is horrendous football. Like, I'm not someone who I need to see a bunch of stars play. I love sports. I love summer league basketball. I've been to the summer league. That's good basketball. Like, there are guys who are competing hard.
It's competitive.
You have, like, not star players, but you have, like, star rookies sometimes playing in these games. Like, it's decent. It's not NBA basketball, but it's fine. Like, preseason football, because teams aren't not only are these guys not starters, some of these guys will never play again in the NFL, teams are also not showing anything. So these guys are also playing with their hands tied behind their back. Mm-hmm. Like, how are we going to see good games if the second and third string guys are playing with 25% of the playbook? Right. You're not going to see it. That's why the product is so bad. I think if they actually open it up, like, XFL football looks better than NFL.
Yeah, I don't want to hear anybody say that spring football is crap when you watch the preseason games. Because at least with the spring games, they're legitimate teams. These guys are trying to keep their football dreams alive. And for some of them, there could be the opportunity to get to the NFL or get back to the NFL if they were already in it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's no comparison. Those games are much better than these preseason games. At some point, though, does the NFL also say, look, if we're charging money for these preseason games, you have to play the starters at least a quarter? Now, personally, as a Jet fan, I would have liked to have seen Aaron Rodgers get a series tomorrow night.
I've been on the fence on about that, because I was someone it would have been famous if something bad would happen, but I was on shout out to Evan and Tiki. They might not have been Evan Tiki at that time, but I know Evan Rodgers was hosting on the New York station, and I was producing, and I said that Aaron Rodgers would not get hurt in that preseason game. I'm like, he's not going to get hurt. Like, he knows how to protect his body. He'll be fine. And Evan Roberts, who's a huge Jets fan, was like, you just jinxed it. It's over. Why would you say that? And I had so many people in my mentions being like, if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, we're going to find you. And, of course, he did not get hurt. He played great in that one or two series he played with the Jets.
Yeah.
And, of course, he got hurt in week one. So I was like, well, Nobody came back to me and said, "Oh, you're the reason he got hurt," because I said preseason. I didn't say anything about the regular season. I think it probably isn't the wisest to say I'm going to start my comeback tour against Nick Bosa and Fred Warner. But, I mean, I would still rather lose him in the regular season than preseason. So I it probably isn't too much risk, but I understand not playing him.
Yeah, I would have gone a step further and say if he got a series and they went 3-and-out, I would have brought him back for a second one. I just want to see him get into some rhythm before the first game of the season. I understand why he's not. But just personally, I would have preferred that he played. But the whole preseason football thing is a big problem. They have to figure this out because it's garbage.
I think Goodell knows this. Why he always insists that they want to keep lessening the games.
If you had an office here at the studios, you don't have an office, right?
There's a Maggie and Perloff office.
There's a Maggie and Perloff. But if you had your own office and you had valuables and collectibles and stuff like that, you'd want to make sure that it was protected, locked and everything like that?
For sure.
So St. John's basketball coach Rick Pitino has an office at Carneseca Arena. That's on campus at St. John's. His office was broken into by a pair of thieves who ransacked his office for memorabilia. This is according to police. The two as-yet-identified men ran off with $375 worth of goods, including a basketball and a bullhorn, burglary that took place on Tuesday, where Pitino's office is located a floor above the basketball court. There's a video of these guys walking out with this stuff, so they should be able to find them. It was $375 worth of goods. The memorabilia included a signed basketball and a ceremonial dagger, which really upset Pitino more than the basketball was this dagger. Footage from the heist shared by the New York Post showed the two men walking through the arena's hallways. One man can be seen talking on a phone as he holds the small bullhorn. An item, sources say, was stolen from Pitino's office. Other items stolen, a sword, a mask, and bottles of alcohol.
I saw Pitino make a joke about the alcohol. It was also something he was very sad to lose.
Yeah.
Sword?
It seemed a sword?
Are we serious? And a dagger?
And a dagger. How cool. He went to what's that place in New Jersey? You see the dinner?
Medieval Times.
Medieval Times, right? I should remember it. I went there on a school trip.
I'm sure that Rick Pitino's probably said several jokes about his players being like, "Oh, you guys don't want to practice hard? Let me go get my sword and dagger." I know for a fact that he's used that line plenty. I just feel like normally I've actually been on St. John's campus. I've actually been at Carneseca Arena. Typically, it's not that easy to access. Especially during the summer, it's usually just closed. Like, it's not open. Like, I've been on there. I've snuck on the football field. High school was a fun time. But, like, I'm like, stunned that, like, his office was that accessible to anybody to just walk in.
Right, it was walked in. It doesn't even say that they broke in. It looks to me and sounds to me like they just walked into his office and took the stuff.
It just annoys me when I hear, first of all, don't steal anything, people. It's bad and morally wrong. But, like, when I hear stories and you make this heist, and then I hear $300 worth of items, I'm like, come on. Like,
is it really worth it?
If you go, at a certain point, you got to just say, it ain't worth it. You go in, maybe you break in, you look around, nothing important, just leave. Like, what do you gain from getting $300 worth of goods? You're going to go to jail. You're going to spend time in prison, most likely, or at least time in jail for sure. Like, over $300 worth of stuff? Like, if you told me I robbed a bank, I'd be like, you shouldn't rob banks. But okay, like, there's a lot of money in there. I know why people do it. Walk away.
Yeah.
Once you get to the studio, the office, you see just a weird sword and a dagger. Walk away. You're not gonna need to fight Rick Pitino. He's 80 years old.
Right.
He ain't fighting you if you find him in the office. Just go home.
Go home. Well, hopefully they'll find these two guys. They have them on video. Two clowns, get them in trouble. So stupid. There you go.
Thank you so much, Peter Schwartz. Coming up, the M&P 500 with E doing it. I'll tell you what I have for stock up and stock down coming up after the break.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
All right. M&P 500 without M&P. I saw someone, Delta Brian, in the chat was like, it's the E&J 500. Okay, we'll go with that. Let's start with stock up. I'm going to get a stock up to the New York Liberty. 8 in a row. I know people, I've heard some in the chat be like, talk some WNBA. All right, well, here's your WNBA talk. New York Liberty have been fantastic. They're doing this now without Sabrina Ionescu. They've have a lot of pressure. They're like a pseudo super team. And they made the championship last year, came up a little bit short. I think you're starting to see them come together. They've been the cream of the WNBA for the entire season. So shout out to the New York Liberty. Give them a stock up. Also giving a stock up to the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Jahan Dotson trade was a good gamble. They didn't have a number three receiver. It was the only thing they were missing. It's not the hugest thing in the world to not have a number three receiver, but I think you're seeing an offense now that's coming together that's looking a little scary. Because if he goes home, he feels more comfortable playing in front of the home crowd, so to speak, being a Lehigh Valley kid, and him playing in a much better offense. I think Jahan Dotson, if he's going to figure it out, he'll figure it out in Philly. I want to give a stock up to Coca-Cola. I mean, how much press have they gotten from college football coaches? It's so good, I almost wonder if it's a work. Because you have Lane Kiffin railing against Coca-Cola, talking about how much sugar there was in it. And then the next day, you had Brian Kelly talking about Coca-Cola, but talking about another product they do. He's talking about Smart Water. So we got Coca-Cola in the mix, the actual soda. We got Smart Water, a Coca-Cola product that's getting plugged. Coca-Cola has been talked about more on this show and other sports shows than it's been in years, maybe. We kind of moved past the need for preseason. I think we kind of, as American people, moved past the need for soda. Soda is not as popular anymore. But it feels like there's a gooey for Coca-Cola, so I'm giving them a stock up. I want to give a stock up to backyard baseball. That's right. If you are a millennial like myself and you're a sports fan, you certainly probably grew up playing backyard baseball. It is a children's baseball computer game. Not to get too much into the weeds, but it's making a comeback. A lot of millennials are really excited. The great Pablo Sanchez, one of the greatest video game characters of all time, makes his return. I can't wait for this game. I'm so excited. We got EA College Football back. Now we got backyard baseball. So I'm giving them a stock up. All right, we got to do stock down here. Week zero college football. Do not need it. It's garbage. It's almost as bad as preseason. Not quite as bad because the games do matter. But if you're going to do a week zero, you have to give us some marquee games. And I'm sorry, Florida State and Georgia Tech does not cut it. That's not premier college football. One of the teams can't even get to their week zero game in terms of Delaware State and Hawaii. Like, I want to get excited for college football, and to me, this is like the ultimate tease to be like, this football season actually starts, and unlike the lies the NFL tells when it says that football is back with preseason, this actually is football being back. But you got to give some better games. Like, week zero is corny. Get it out of here. Stock down. Also, a stock down for USA flag football. We talked about the USA flag football quarterback, Hoosh, as he's nicknamed. He's been getting after the NFL players who have suggested that they're going to be playing in the Olympics, saying, hey, they have to earn their spot. Now, I watched this guy's highlights yesterday. There's highlights on anybody. You can find a highlight on Popeye Jones in the 90s in the NBA. Like, people make a highlight reel on anybody, and if someone actually made a highlight reel of Hoosh, I'll be honest, the kid's got some skills. I say kid, but that's one of the problems. I'll get to the kids in a minute, but I mean, he could run, he's quick, he's agile, but I feel like he's looked so bitter and he's been so disrespectful to the NFL players that it's clouded any chance of us taking USA flag football seriously, because now he's saying he's better than Patrick Mahomes, so stock down. Bad stuff, man. Like, just be humble. Say, hey, like, it would be great. Say, hey, I want to play with Patrick Mahomes. I want to play with the NFL players. Say, I hope that we get an opportunity to run with the big guns and we bring back the gold for the U.S. Don't put it you versus them. Bold predictions of college football season next.